Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN, Community Radio, and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to Dig This, Environmental Watch. I am host Pamela Spoto. Today I'm joined in the studio by Craig Boyer, Master of Social Work, who has worked in hospice, and Shane Houchins, our engineer. Shane Houchins, our engineer. I'm repeating that because sometimes I call him by a different last name. I have no idea why I do that. And our featured guest today is once again Dr. Carolyn Baker. I'm so glad to have Dr. Baker back for part two. Last month we did part one. Dr. Baker is an amazing person. She's a writer, a professor, a coach, a consultant, and much more. This is a phone interview as Dr. Baker lives in Colorado. Welcome, Dr. Baker.
Well, thank you, Pamela. It's good to be back.
I am so glad that you are. And I'm going to tell our listeners about your bio again, just in case they're tuning in for the first time this time around. So, because it's very wonderful, and you're a prolific writer, and so I want people to be aware of what they might be able to read and get their hands on, because this is wonderful information. So her official bio is Carolyn Baker, PhD, is the co-author with Andrew Harvey of Return to Joy in 2016, having herself written Love in the Age of Ecological Apocalypse, The Relationships We Need to Thrive, and this was written in 2015, as well as Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truths for Turbulent Times, 2013. Her previous books are Navigating the Coming Chaos, A Handbook for Intertransition, and Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse, and that's in 2009. With Guy McPherson, Carolyn also authored Extinction Dialogues, How to Live with Death in Mind. This is a fantastic book, and I finished that some time ago. And she published Dark Gold, The Human Shadow, and The Global Crisis in 2016. And that is probably the book we're going to be focusing on again. And I just finished reading that last night, Dark Gold. It's an incredibly wonderful book. She lives and writes in Boulder, Colorado, and manages Carolyn Baker Educational Services, LLC, at www.carolynbaker.net. She's a former psychotherapist and professor of psychology and history. Carolyn is a life coach and spiritual consultant for people who want to live more resiliently in the present as they navigate the global crisis. And she even has a podcast, The New Life Bowl, Life Boat Hour, and this airs weekly online. So at this point, I just like to, if it's all right with everyone, I would just like to review very briefly part one, and then we're moving right into part two, which is going to focus on the shadow. But in part one, we talked about the two books that I mentioned, Extinction Dialogues and Return to Joy. Very briefly, in Extinction Dialogues, we discussed the position that the Earth is in hospice, and this seems very true to me, because all we have to do is examine what's going on the planet, you know, climate change, tremendous loss of species every day, war, genocide, denial, you know, overconsumption. Along with this position is that we need to grieve. That is one thing that Carolyn Baker is saying in her books. And if we can face our grief and feel those feelings, we have the capacity to feel great joy. In addition, once we get it, in the sense of what is happening to Mother Earth, we can work in service of others, and we can help reduce the suffering of other species. The deeper the sorrow, the greater the joy. I really like this quote by Blake that Carolyn has included in one of her books. And then we can embrace living life with exuberance and purpose. And so today we are going to focus on the shadow. And once again, I'm going to repeat the title of the book, Dark Gold, The Human Shadow and the Alchemy of the Global Crisis. And this book is all about the shadow and shadow work and exercises at the end of every chapter that a person can utilize. So what I would like to do initially is to ask the question, Carolyn, why should we care about the shadow? I mean, we're so busy. We're going to work. We're going to school. We're taking care of families. Why should we even care about doing this work of healing the shadow?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be back here today, and thank you for that question. I want to answer it by reading a quote, and I'm going to read this quote twice. I'm going to read it first in terms of our personal psyches, our personal dynamics, our personal shadow. And it's a quote from Jung, Carl Jung, and it says, "The shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality, for no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is the essential condition for any kind of self-knowledge, and therefore, as a rule, meets with considerable resistance." I'm going to read it again, and I'm going to put the word culture in wherever the word personality is. "The shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole culture. For no one can become conscious of the shadow, no culture can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the culture as present and real. This act is the essential condition for any kind of cultural self-knowledge, and it therefore, as a rule, meets with considerable resistance." So does that begin to answer the question, why is this important? We are looking at politicians picking up reporters and slamming them to the ground. We're looking at the Texas governor this afternoon holding up a piece of paper that he used for target practice and saying, "I pretended that this bullseye was a media reporter." So, you know, and we just, you know, we've got a president who's just, you know, who's gone around body slamming people. We've got that video footage of him at a wrestling match going up and just slamming a guy, you know, the thug in chief. And now we've got a budget that is brutal and grotesque and like something you would see in a banana republic that's going to, you know, get 40 million people off of health care and health insurance, that's going to just decimate seniors and rip the hell out of Medicaid, and on and on and on and on, you know, and the escalation of the war in Afghanistan that's been going on now for 16 years. So do you think we got a shadow problem in this culture and within ourselves? You know, because the thug in chief is just a mirror of our own shadow. And it's really tough to look at that and face that, but it's true.
Well, that is, you know, exceedingly interesting. And maybe for some people that don't quite get that, maybe we should also talk about how you would describe and define the shadow. Because, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with you that about the thug in chief and, you know, a mirror of what we are doing in society and our own shadow. So maybe we should explore a little bit about what we mean when we talk about the shadow. I mean,
sure,
the dark side, but more than that.
Yeah. So the shadow is any part of us that we send away because it doesn't match with our ego image of ourselves. So, you know, we all want to think that we're honest people. I'm not a dishonest person. That person over there is, but not me. I'm a kind and compassionate person. You know, I'm not heartless. That person over there is, not me. Or even positive qualities. A little boy can be raised in a home where it's absolutely forbidden for him to cry. Man up, get a stiff upper lip, you know, pull on your big boy pants. Don't be crying. Don't be a sissy. And yet, you know, that little boy, that young man is carrying tremendous grief. And if he starts crying or he starts showing that softness, you know, he might put a damper on it right away because that's his bright shadow. That's his positive part of his personality that is very human and very normal, but he's been taught not to show it. So the shadow can be dark or it can be light, but it's anything in ourselves that we send away and we say, that's not me.
Yes, and I, and for our listeners, in your book, Dark Gold, I mean, I'm looking, you have 12 chapters there, and the first chapter is, What is the Human Shadow? And you have done a tremendous amount of research on this, and you bring in various psychotherapists and philosophers and psychologists who all help define the shadow or pieces of that shadow. And I think it was Stephen Diamond that just said what you just said as well. It's the not me. It's the part that demonizes the other. And it seems to me what is so sad about this is that psychotherapy doesn't seem to be, it seems as though in psychotherapy today that it is using medication rather than doing this deep work. And right. So that in itself is a problem. And I know that Craig has a, maybe we should come back to that in just a moment, but Craig has a comment or a question or something.
Yeah, a comment. Because I'm finding, Carolyn, that too many people in our culture now don't mind showing no compassion, and they relish that they don't show compassion,
right.
That they're mean
right.
and nasty and tough, and it gets ratings and it makes money. And mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. there's a core there that needs to be addressed.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to address that core in a little bit, but that's what eventually happens. You see, what we do with the shadow, we don't just carry the shadow around and it just kind of lays there dormant. Shadow has to go somewhere, and what we do with it, because it's really uncomfortable, is we unconsciously project it. So we project it on other people, we project it on other cultures, on other races. And we do that, you know, continuously, and we tend to increase doing that as the shadow becomes more and more uncomfortable within ourselves, so that eventually you get this acceptance, you know, within ourselves or within the culture of mean, nasty, uncompassionate behavior that becomes acceptable because we projected it so much.
Yes, and that seems to be a real problem when those, I don't know whether to call it the hyper-masculine or hyper-masculinity seems to be what is honored and celebrated, the guns, the war, the killing, the body slamming, that shows right. that toughness, but it's not really toughness in our... I think in our definition of the word. So maybe we could just back up here just for a moment, because it is curious to me that if we want to start doing work in looking at the shadow, and I think the idea here too is that as we recognize this, we become better human beings, more authentic human beings,
yes.
more compassionate
yes.
human beings. And so I'm not sure, it goes back to psychotherapy. Well, let's go to psychotherapy just for a moment, because there'd be other ways in which to work with the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a person off the street, if they have insurance and they want to go to a psychologist or a psychotherapist or a psychiatrist, often it is come in, work on this very specific problem and get out, you know, rather than
right.
this seems like this could take some time, this
work
on the shadow.
So much, yeah, there's so much focus right now in psychotherapy on childhood trauma and, you know, our early development. And that's fine and that's necessary. And lots of people are carrying huge amounts of trauma. But there's much less awareness until recently of the cultural influences, and more people are starting to come and see their therapist now and talk about how the culture is really disturbing them. But yeah, one of the reasons that I put so many practices and exercises at the end of each chapter in Dark Gold is so that people could start doing this work right now. And I just want to talk about another opportunity for transformation of the shadow. As I mentioned last time on this program, my colleague Dean Walker in Ashland, Oregon, and I are going to be doing two pilot courses in the fall, one in Ashland and one in Boulder, Colorado, called Resilience Bridge, Real Tools for Real Times. And part of this work, not all of it, but part of it, is working on the shadow, but working on it in a safe place, in a supportive place with other people who say, yeah, I've got a shadow too, and, you know, and it gets in my way. And we have that kind of safety and support with each other that we need in order to do that work.
Yes, yes. And I think in your book that you mentioned that what you mention is that not to try and do it all by yourself, all alone.
Never.
That it helps to have a guide or a group of people or a professional to help guide and facilitate this work. And I wanted to reinforce something that you just said, because I think this is so ultimately important. And it was a quote by Robert Bly, and I've kind of paraphrased it, that you had in your in chapter one. And it's something like, the personal shadow of the individual is influenced by the collective shadow carried by the community at large. I think that is tremendously important. Yes. that in the culture or in the community I am in, and I'm thinking about how do I get information? Okay, there's the newspaper, there's the television news, there are schools, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that can really influence, I mean, obviously, how I see the world and how I may very well scapegoat others. Because when we start, as you had mentioned, when we start blaming the other or participating in the othering, then, you know, we're not looking at ourselves at all. And that allows us to do some really gruesome things in the world.
And
I know that we're going to be talking about, we're kind of moving back and forth between the personal and the community shadow. And I know that you also said that, you know, one reason to engage in shadow work is for healing parts of ourselves and for healing the earth community, you know, as best we can. One of the best things we can do is to withdraw those projections and look at ourselves. Do you want to speak to that a little bit more? Or
yes, I do. And in the Resilience Bridge course, which people can find out by going to my website, learn more about it and register by going to carolynbaker.net, we're going to be talking about just that. We're going to be talking about how did we get to this place where we are so disconnected, and we're disconnected from ourselves, from each other, and from Earth. And shadow is part of that. And part of what we've done as a culture is we've otherized and objectified nature so that nature is not a living being with whom we have a relationship. It's resource for us to extract and make money from. And so part of the work that has to be done, and this is part of shadow work, is developing this deep connection in our hearts and our bodies with Earth. And I'm not talking about going camping and doing some hiking and, you know, fishing and being outdoors once in a while. I'm talking about a deep, profound intimacy, earth intimacy, that just changes all the ways that we look at the earth and we begin to see our relationship with it. And as we do this, we can't possibly objectify it. We can't possibly extract from it. We can only love it and protect it.
Yes, and I think that, and this kind of goes in a slightly different direction, that the more we get involved with technology and the more, and I think you addressed this in one of your chapters as well, you know, the selfies and the cell phones, the less connected we are with what is truly going on around us. And And I need to remind our listeners that this is KKRN.org, 88.5 Bella Vista, Round Mountain, your local community radio station. And I'm Pamela Spoto, host of Environmental Watch. And Craig Boyer is in the studio with me today. And we have Dr. Carolyn Baker, our featured guest. And we're talking about the shadow. I was wondering if... I had wanted to just briefly read part of the old Cherokee teaching, because what is so spectacular about this is it has a different ending than I had ever heard.
Yes.
And to me, it fits right along with what we are talking about in terms of denial or acceptance or looking at the truth about ourselves. So I'm going to read just a short paragraph here, if that's okay.
Right. Okay. Sure.
So this is the old Cherokee teaching. The old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. And a fight is going on inside me, he said to the boy. It is a terrible fight. It is between two wolves. One is evil. He is angry, envious. He is full of sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. And then the elder continued, the other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you and inside every other person, too. Now, the grandson thought about this for a minute and asked his grandfather, which wolf will win? And like it says here, what I had heard as the answer is the one you feed or the one you feed most. But the twist in this is, and that the other one is really simple too. Yeah, if I'm going to feed the good wolf, then the good wolf, you know, wins. If I'm going to feed the right. bad wolf, the bad wolf wins. But the yeah. but the elder Cherokee said, if you feed them right, they both win. And so it's the idea of giving both of those attention and some sort of nutrients, you know. It's not just mm-hmm. trying to, oh, I'm going to deny this one side. I'm not going to look at it. I'm going to repress it. It's right. evil. And the more, I guess, that, and this is what came out in your book as well, the more that we try to repress this shadow, the stronger it becomes. And it comes right. out in right. different ways.
Yeah. And so the idea is to just look at it, be willing to look and notice the feelings that come up as we look. One of the big feelings is shame. And, you know, we are a very shame-infested culture. It's one of the reasons I love the work of Brené Brown and her tapes and TED Talks on shame, her book, The Power of Vulnerability. And so we look at that shame, we feel it, we feel some of the other emotions that come up, and we work with this consciously. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of making a list of the feelings we feel and just looking at that, you know, and sitting with that, maybe talking to a trusted friend about that, maybe going out into the earth and sharing all that with a tree. Now, that might sound really silly or stupid, you know, but it's amazing. In workshops, I have people go out and wander very purposefully in nature and sometimes have conversations with these beings in nature. And they come back and they say, I felt heard, you know. No, it's not the same thing as having a conversation with a human, but there's a different quality of relationship and you know, this is a very old idea. Indigenous people have been doing this for thousands of years. I went and talked to the river. I went and talked to the trees, and I feel so much better.
I think that is wonderful because it's a way of honoring other species. Mm-hmm. And because in your book, you talk about the specialness, the entitlement that some cultures, well, and ours certainly has. And, you know, I am superior, right? But when I go out in nature, and it's so interesting that you said that, is because there are certain hiking trails or walking trails around here. And every once in a while, I'll stop at one of these huge oak trees, and I just put my hands on the bark, you know, and I breathe. And it's just, I can see it right in my mind's eye right now, how it just, it's very relaxing and it's connecting and I'm getting more oxygen at the very least, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, there are, and I don't know if we have time before the next break, but there are 5 collective shadows and 5 personal shadows that I want to talk about that Andrew Harvey and I wrote about in our book, Return to Joy. So
yes.
Let's just put a placeholder on that.
Well, we certainly can talk about that now if you like. The other, because I was going to talk a little bit about chapters 3 and 4 about scapegoating, but we can come back to that, or which whichever way you want to go right at this moment. We can go with, you know, back to return to joy, or we can go into scapegoating.
Well, let's go to return to joy for a moment. And
okay.
A lot of people looked at our book, Return to Joy, and, oh, we're so glad you guys wrote something about joy, because, you know, you and Andrew are darkness junkies. You're always talking about, you know, the doom and gloom of the world, and, you know, we're really not, but that's how some people hear it. And so we said, let's write a book on joy. But the deal is, you cannot experience the core joy that is at your center, that is much deeper than circumstantial societal happiness. You can't really access and savor that joy unless you're willing to do shadow work. And so we talked about five collective shadows, very relevant to our conversation today. And this has to do with the global crisis. The first collective shadow is disbelief. We're just not able to accept that something so atrocious as the global crisis could be happening. And it's kind of this dissociation that we might feel when somebody gives us a terminal diagnosis. But that disbelief is not only dangerous in that it prevents any kind of meaningful action, it often leads to accusations of people speaking frankly about the global crisis as extreme or fear-mongering. And so we see this a lot right now with climate deniers. You know, it's like, nah, there's no such thing as climate change. And you want to rant and rave about this and science and so forth. Well, you know, you're just one of those fear mongers. And what happens is that if we're really willing to start believing that the crisis is as serious as it is, then we're probably going to go to the next shadow mechanism, which is denial. Surely global warming is not as severe as these leading people, you know, are talking about it. It's going to lead to extinction. The mainstream media couldn't possibly keeping us in the dark about what's happening in the world. The United States is not an empire attempting to conquer the world. It's simply defending itself against the enemies of democracy. And so then, you know, if we can get through that layer of shadow, and that begins to recede, things kind of get worse. And we get into the level of dread. And dread threatens to overwhelm us as we contemplate the consequences of our actions in terms of global warming and nuclear proliferation and trying to control the world militarily. And fundamentally, what we dread is the heartbreak and the suffering that are already around us that we haven't been really looking at. And then as that layer dispels, we might come into disillusion and despair, which might be attended by rage or a sense of hopelessness. And, you know, I didn't realize that the global crisis was this big. It's far more severe than I've allowed myself to recognize. And what can I do? And this is so overwhelming. And finally, when you get really down to the core of this collective shadow dynamic, is a death wish. And a death wish is really kind of a natural outcome of these other four shadows. And it's a fundamental desire not to be alive on planet Earth. And it's also kind of a result of this death-phobic but numbed-out culture that we live in. And I think, you know, to be very practical, I think that has a lot to do with the opioid epidemic and the rise in suicides that we've been seeing in the United States in recent years, because for some people, this is just too much. And these are the layers of shadow that we tend to have to go through if we allow ourselves to really know the truth about what's going on. You know, and this denial is what we're using to push away knowing these things that really are.
And I have I just want to interject just very briefly. I have a friend, and we've talked about some of these issues. She's a very good friend of mine, and we talk about climate change and the denial and how that may change the growing of food and the weather and the uh-huh. species extinction and all of that. And she basically says, you know, I'd just rather be dead. You know, why would I want to live in all of that? Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. I mean, to come to that conclusion, well, yeah, I'm just going to die, and then I won't have to worry about, you know, it's kind of like, why would I want to live in the midst of all that pain?
That's a really, really good question, and that's what my work is about, and that's what the work is about that Dean Walker and I are launching. How can we live and live with passion and purpose in the face of, you know, what is happening and will continue to worsen in the future? It's like, you know, yeah, we may not survive physically. We may suffer a great deal. But in the midst of that, as we go into that, how can we live with meaning and purpose? And that's what our work is about. And that's why so many people want to check out or do check out, is because they don't see a way to get through that otherwise.
And we spoke a little bit about this last time, but this just totally resonates again with me, that if we don't feel the deep grief, or maybe I should rephrase that, if we do feel that deep grief of what is happening in the world, that also allows us to feel deep joy. And I think Return to Joy really, really focuses on that, because otherwise we become really armored. We can become really armored and hard-hearted. And I really like what you have said in the books that I've read of yours, that, okay, so I'm feeling this grief, and rightly so, of hundreds of species dying a day, but what can I do, you know? And part of it is that, and it just makes me cry every time I think of it, is that I could help lessen the suffering of these other species the best that I can, or that I can be of service, and that can be part of my meaning and purpose in life. And in doing that, I really do feel better, even though there's this catastrophic event that is happening like we've never seen before.
Absolutely. And I just want to speak to that very directly. This week, you know, I was kind of flipping through the channels and noticed that there's going to be a program on the other night called Prison Dogs. And it's about a woman who was looking at a global crisis, just like you were talking about, and going, what can I do? I do dogs. What I can do is I can take dogs into prisons and have the prisoners train the dogs to be guide dogs, service dogs, companions to veterans returning from combat with PTSD. And so this woman, her name is Gloria, I'm not remembering her last name, but if you want to go to PBS website and look up Prison Dogs, this woman is one of my heroines now, because she just decided, what can I do? I do dogs. How can I do dogs? I can do it this way.
Carolyn, I saw that, and it was very inspiring, and she made a huge difference in the lives of those prisoners. They were in the pits of hell, and they came to love life and love the dogs and love what they were doing.
And she made a huge difference in the lives of the vets that the dogs went to.
There were benefits all around. That's wonderful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, we may not all be glorious, and we can't all do that same sort of thing. But, you know, as Andrew says in Sacred Activism, his book, The Hope, A Guide to Sacred Activism, and I think I may have said this last time, you wonder what you can do. Well, choose that thing that keeps you awake at 3 o'clock in the morning and breaks your heart. Follow the heartbreak. Follow what really calls your heart to do. The smallest thing, the biggest thing, whatever it is, follow your heart. And that's where you will find service, and that will help you find purpose and meaning in the midst of this crisis.
You know, that is so right on. And I happen to have some notes here from your chapter 12 of Dark Gold. And and you talk about that even more in that chapter as an exercise, and I really, really like that. In fact, I'm going to just read this little section here. You said, "And how do we find our mission if we don't already know it?" And as you said, you quote Andrew Harvey, "When you locate your deepest heartbreak and face your deepest heartbreak, you will be guided to your most profound mission." And I was thinking, You know, I was sitting, truthfully, I was sitting in a coffee shop yesterday, kind of this little dark coffee house that I like, and I was thinking, well, what is my deepest heartbreak? And it's not going to just, you know, pop up just like that, because there are very, right. when I see immigrants from countries that we have bombed and destroyed their infrastructure, and they're riding in these boats and they're sinking, and some of them get on shore. And I just remember this father's face, and there were just tears running down his face. You know, there's, that breaks my heart, you know, that.
Absolutely.
And then when I think about how people can abuse animals and kill the wolves, I mean, that breaks my heart. And yeah. And I think, okay, so I've identified a couple of areas, you know, that would be for me, I guess, avenues to pursue in terms of this mission.
Well, then it certainly, and from there, to just open to spirit, you know, just ask spirit, could be some sense of higher power. Again, it could be a tree or a river or an animal. You know, what should I do here? What should I do with these talents and skills that I have and this heartbreak that I'm carrying around? You know, how to work with that, how to express that in the world in service.
Yes, and you know, and you were talking about, you know, five collective, the 5 D's, you know, collective shadow, and I also had this paragraph from chapter 12, and it's a quote by Paul Levy, or is it Levy or Levy?
Paul Levy.
Uh-huh. May I read that?
Absolutely.
And,
sure.
And you say, in a brilliant article entitled Shadow Projections, The Fuel of War, Jungian therapist Paul Levy writes, quote, "Shadow projection is itself the unmediated expression, revelation, and playing out of the shadow. Shadow projection, the process in which we demonize our enemies, entrancing ourselves into believing that they are inhumane monsters who need to be destroyed, is the underlying psychological process which, when collectively mobilized, is the high octane fuel which feeds the human activity of war." And I just find that is just so true.
Well, it absolutely is. And we're really seeing this now. We've been seeing it for, you know, probably since the beginning of our country, but we're really seeing it now as the United States projects evil on, you know, back in the Bush days, it was the evil empire, and now today it's ISIS, and it's the Muslim religion, and blah, blah, blah. And what this always leads to then is terrible conflagration. And I just posted today on Facebook, because it is Memorial Day weekend, an article that I wrote back in 2016 called, let's see, it's in Dark Gold. It's chapter 2, or it's one of the chapters in Dark Gold, which is called, I can't believe I blanked on it.
Well, I have all the title of your chapter headings here. Okay. I can read them.
Yeah, okay, so it is. Yeah, if you would do that, please.
Okay, so chapter 2 is all about power, victim, tyrant, rebel, savior. Chapter 3 is that's not who we are, the shadow of torture.
Okay. It is thank you for your service, the enduring ghosts of war.
Yes.
Thank you for your service, enduring ghosts of war.
Yes,
you can find that on my website. You can find it in Facebook. I just put it on Facebook today. Or just Google it, thank you for your service, the enduring ghosts of war. And that's what our young people bring home with them. That's what our veterans bring home with them is, you know, they've been really victimized by this shadow projection. And they come back with these ghosts, you know, and this is the shadow of our military industrial complex system.
Nowadays, they come back and they're praised for their service. But in my mind, the kind of service that we do should not have happened in the first place. So
yeah.
I'm reluctant to say thank you for your service. I wish that they had not gone.
Right. And I want to say something about why they go. Because, economically, of course, it's impossible for some working class and young men and women of color to really, you know, get an economic hold in this culture and be able to, you know, make a living and become part of the middle class. So the military offers a pretty good option in that respect. But the other thing I want to say about this is that particularly for young men, this is a time in their lives around 17 or 18 when, you know, normally in indigenous cultures, they would have gone through an initiation rite of passage experience around the time of puberty. And in those indigenous cultures that practice this, that is the purpose of life right there. You are prepared for birth for this initiation ceremony, which causes you to reach deep down inside yourself and discover who you really are and what you're really made of, to go through that ordeal, which is always a brush with death, that takes you to the very edge of who you are and the depths of your soul, and then come back a changed, transformed person. Jung believed that we all have this archetype within us, that we all naturally crave this, but in Western culture, we don't have it. So we have to get it from somewhere because it's an archetype within us screaming out to be realized. So, you know, this might explain gang culture and the desire of young men to be initiated. And it certainly explains the draw of the military for some young people. And so they go and they have this disgraceful initiation that is a brush with death, or it is literal death. And if they're fortunate, they come back, but they might come back with missing body parts and certainly a huge hole in the psyche. And so this is what Jung called a profane initiation as opposed to a sacred initiation. And Michael Mead calls it carried out by the wrong people at the wrong time for all the wrong reasons.
And you also make a distinction between the soldier and the warrior, do you not?
Absolutely.
And
the soldier is the trained killer. And yes, he or she is a protector and they're doing this duty for the country. But that's not the same as the spiritual warrior.
Yes.
The spiritual warrior who's here to defend the sacred and protect the sacred and is not the same as a trained killer. And we sometimes get those confused, but they're very different.
And that is certainly true. And I think this also directly relates to, I'm looking here in terms of scapegoating, because I think that is another reason, that is another way that we can get groups of young people to enlist in the military, but also get the support that we have through the media for it, is the notion, is this scapegoating. And I guess you would describe scapegoating as a form of the shadow or an aspect of the shadow. And I'm thinking about that for a moment, because those things that this is what just drives me wild. Those things that we accuse other countries of doing, those things that we say are ethically and morally terrible and wrong, and these are the reasons we're going to war, are those things that the U.S. engages in itself. And it drives
yes.
me wild. And I just happened to make a little list of this last night as I was thinking about it. For example, torture. That country uh-huh. is, you know, Saddam Hussein was torturing his people. They're aggressive. They arrest protesters. They kill civilians. And, you know, it goes on and on. And, but we somehow either, and I think Obama in one of your chapters here, you use Obama as an example, and that is exactly what he said was, yes, we've tortured a few people, but that's not who we are.
Right.
You
exactly.
know,
exactly.
It's the other, you know, it's the other guy. And
yeah.
the U.S.
Yeah.
has engaged in torture. We have yeah. black sites. We are aggressive.
Yeah.
We have extreme surveillance on people. We arrest protesters. We're the only country that dropped nuclear bombs. We
yeah.
engage in wars in how yeah. many countries right now? 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And we turn
yeah.
and we kill civilians inadvertently or just do it. And yet we say, you know, Russia is the evilest country in the world. You know, they are very, very aggressive. And people believe that. So I guess, Caroline, it's so difficult to look at ourselves. It's so difficult to get a hold of this collective shadow that we are doing, blaming these other places, we are doing exactly the same thing ourselves. How come people can't see that?
Well, because it's really hard to see it. It's really, really hard to see it. And that's why you need safety and support. I do some of this work with coaching clients who want to do this work. And I do a lot of grief work with coaching clients because they need a safe place. And there's not always a workshop they can go to. There's not always a pilot course they can go to. But it's really important, if you're doing grief work or shadow work, that you have a safe container, that you have support. Because it's very, very hard work. And I want to just go back for a moment to that question you just asked me, the difference between a warrior and a soldier. And in the chapter on the military in my book, Dark Gold, there's a little quote by Matthew Fox, and I'd like to read it. He talks about the difference between the warrior and the soldier. And he says, "To me, the key is understanding the distinction between a warrior and a soldier. A Vietnam veteran who volunteered to go to war at 17 described this eloquently. When I was in the Army, I was a soldier. I was a puppet doing whatever anybody told me to do, even if it meant going against what my heart told me was right. I didn't know anything about being a warrior until I hit the streets and marched alongside my brothers for something I really believed in. When I found something I believed in, a higher power found me. He quit being a soldier and became a warrior when he followed his soul's orders, not his officers. In his case, this meant protesting war and going to jail for it. The late Buddhist meditation master Choyang Trungpa talked about the sad and tender heart of the warrior. The warrior is in touch with his heart, the joy, the sadness, the expansiveness of it."
Yes. That's very profound.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yes.
There's a tremendous amount to think about, you know, in all of this. And I'm just, I do have faith and belief that if we were able to do more of this, it would be amazing the results that we would see in the world.
If we could get people past the denial. You know, Pamela and I and you, we see it, and it's so obvious, but the vast majority of people, they continue to deny that we're doing these very things that that we're, quote, fighting against. So we can't understand where the denial comes from. It just doesn't seem to equate.
Well, you know, it also seems as though that we, and every country probably does that, we rationalize. We torture for the right reasons. we're torturing these people because we need this information, because we're in jeopardy and they're evil.
Right.
So
right,
we keep rationalizing.
And torture doesn't get the results you want anyway.
I know.
That's right.
So it's a very...
So it's a crazy
thought. It's sadistic. It's sadistic.
Yeah.
And to think that the APA, the American was it Psychological Association, a friend of mine, stopped membership in the APA because of that very reason, because the military included psychologists to help develop the torture programs.
Right, and they made a whole big chunk of money off of that too.
They
didn't they?
For the money of it all.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
My goodness. Well, you know, we have about, I would say, maybe 10 minutes left of our show. And I want to remind the listeners that this is KKRN.org, Community Radio, 88.5 Bella Vista, Round Mountain. And I'm in the studio with Craig Boyer. And I'm going to say, this is terrible, Shane Houchins, our engineer, who is absolutely wonderful. I keep calling him Shane Boyer for some reason. And so I just want to say it's Shane Houchins, Shane Houchins. And we have Dr. Carolyn Baker on the line with us talking about the shadow. And at some point, I did make a copy from chapter 7, and I don't know if this is where you want to go now. It will take me a couple of minutes to read some of this, but you talk about, and I want to ask you just to make sure that this we can hold this off too, about extinction and how much we don't want to talk mm-hmm. about extinction, mm-hmm. and then yes. and then going from there. And you just have this wonderful paragraph about why we should do the right thing anyway.
mm-hmm.
So
okay.
do you want to go in this direction now?
Or? Absolutely. Sure. I'll follow you there. You bet.
Okay. And chapter 7 is called Extinction Beyond the Shadow of Death. And you mentioned here that few people want to talk about the topic of extinction. And I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs. I'll stop here. And she said that this doesn't, even though we don't want to talk about it, or few people talk about it, it does not preclude its nagging influence in the psyche. Indeed, the notion of extinction and all the emotions attended by it constitute an enormous shadow in the collective psyche, and perhaps the final one. Therefore, any substantial consideration of the shadow must include the shadow of extinction, which could be the shadow to end all shadows. And then you go on to say that, you know, you're not talking about when this is going to happen. You're not going to engage in debates about, you know, when are all the species going to die, or when is the climate change going to be, you know, the finality of it all. But the fact that this climatologist, this is indeed happening. And so you go on to say the fact that humans are destroying the planet and that they know this fills us with dread and makes the collective and personal shadows even more dark and deadly. And then you go on, and I do want to read this next paragraph because it's very beautiful. The possibility of extinction appearing more likely with each new scientific study of climate change is first and foremost a momentous cacophonous alarm summoning us to radically abandon business as usual and allow ourselves to descend emotionally and spiritually into the deeper layers of the human psyche. We must abandon the American dream and all the other chimeras that promise that we can experience infinite growth on a finite planet. And then I'm going to skip over here, and you say, rather, we may choose the path of paradox, what Jung called holding the tension of opposites. From my perspective, it is the most radical embodiment of all. We alter our perception that saving the planet depends on us, or that anything we do or not do will manifest the death row miracle so hoped for by the condemned inmate. However, we consume less, not because it will lower greenhouse gases, but because we need less, and it feels better to live more simply and perhaps express more generosity to others who have less. We seek avenues for sharing our love. We allow our hearts to be broken open with compassion. Kindness, not entitlement, becomes our most cherished preoccupation. We savor every occurrence of beauty and blessing in our lives, and we seek to create beauty in every circumstance. We treat other species with exquisite mercy and make their extinction as gentle as possible. Gratitude, not acquisition, becomes the motivating force of our lives. Moreover, we immerse ourselves in these practices as we witness the withering and perhaps irreversible departure of ecosystems. We allow beauty and sorrow to intersect in the flaming crucible of our hearts. So I just thought that was really, really lovely, that particular paragraph, that we do the right things because we may not save the planet, but because it's the right thing to do, and we take care of what is around us.
Well, absolutely, and I don't know that there is much more that we can do. It's about holding this tension, as the writing there says. You know, I know a lot of people who have come to understand that we are on a severe trajectory toward extinction. And so they just throw in the towel and they say, what the hell? You know, why am I doing anything? Why don't I just smoke a lot of weed and play and, you know, whatever. But you know, it's over. We're finished, and that's it. And so they become very nihilistic and really, really in the pits of despair. There are other people who go, oh, no, we can't really be extinct. No, that's not really true. That's extreme. I'm going to go out and march for climate change, and I'm going to this, and I'm going to get solar panels, and da-da-da-da, you know. And it's sort of like I'm trying there in that passage to show what it looks like to hold the tension of the opposites. Yeah, I get the solar panels because it feels better, and, you know, it might be a little cheaper for me, and certainly better for the environment, even if it's not going to save the planet. But I'm not gonna go into nihilistic despair. What I'm gonna do is hold these tensions. I'm gonna hold this heartbreak and this fear alongside creating some meaning and purpose in my life. And if you don't have that meaning and purpose to hold alongside the despair, then you need to do some of the work that I'm putting out there for people to do, because it is possible to hold this tension, and we don't know the outcome. You know, the fact is life is fatal and nobody gets out of here alive.
Right.
And so you could die tomorrow, or you can die in 10 years, or you can become shriveled up with global warming. Who knows? But the point is, I'm living right now, doing the best that I can, loving life, loving the work that I do, loving Earth, really reconnecting with myself and my inner wisdom, with you and with nature. And so, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hold that tension.
Yes. Yes, and at the, and we only have maybe 3 minutes left, and the time has just flown by once again, and it's been wonderful. Are there any final points that you would like to make, or questions that you
I
might?
I have a question.
Oh, okay.
I do have a question.
Sure.
I heard Guy McPherson say that if we could overnight stop the use of all modern energy, coal-fired power plants, all of that, trucks, autos, that the extinction of our species would actually be accelerated due to a significant increase in world temperatures. And could you explain this for our listeners?
Well, I'm not a scientist, and I'm not Guy McPherson. I can tell you that there are self-reinforcing feedback loops in all of the climate change dynamics. And so what I know is that what that means is that within these dynamics are mechanisms created by global warming that cause it to worsen and worsen and worsen. And so I don't know about, you know, the facts on which he bases. If we discontinued all this stuff, it would make extinction, you know, it would intensify that or hasten that. I don't know. What I know is that we need to be doing the work that I am putting out there, because that's really all we've got. And, you know, it's time to get put on our big boy and girl pants and do this work. And so that's why I'm begging people to register for our pilot courses. I'm begging people to contact me for life coaching. I'm begging people to read my books and do this work. We have a twice monthly Safe Circle call where we get online for free for 1 hour. Two Tuesday nights a month, and we just gather as a group and we talk about whatever is coming up for us about the global crisis, whatever we feel, whatever our concerns are. We support each other. We love each other in these calls. And if anybody wants to contact me to become part of this mail list, it's Carolyn at carolynbaker.net. I'll put you on the list, and you can jump on the call twice a month and not be alone with all these feelings about what's happening.
And thank you so much, Dr. Carolyn Baker. And I will make sure that on KKRN in our with our archive version of this particular show, that I will list contacts, the contact for you, your webpage, the
thank
books
you.
That we talked about. And I so appreciate your being with us today. And, you know, you're right. This is something we can do. We can look at ourselves and work on ourselves and pull back those projections and make a little bit of difference in the world.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's really, really important. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I thank Craig for being here today as well. And for our audience, please tune in next week for Dig This Trump Watch. And so here we go. And goodbye.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Goodbye. Bye-bye.